Hi, good evening. Welcome to another edition of Little Atoms. Tonight with me, Neil Denny. Little Atoms is a live talk show about ideas. Each show features a guest from the worlds of science, journalism, politics, academia, human rights, or the arts in conversation. And my guest tonight is the author Tanya Glide. Tanya is an author, journalist, and broadcaster. She's written two novels to date, Clever Girl and Junk DNA. Her short stories have appeared in the Disco 2000 and Vox and Roll anthologies. She was Time Out sex columnist for 2 years and produced and presented the groundbreaking, and it must be said, much missed chat show, Midnight Sex Talk, on here on Resonance 104.4 FM. Tanya's latest book is called Cleaning Up, How I Gave Up Drinking and Lived, and that's what we'll be talking about tonight. So, Tanya, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
As I just said, the book is called Cleaning Up, How I Gave Up Drinking and Lived. That's the subtitle.
But
when you actually read the book, it's about giving up quite a lot more than that. There's some seriously heavy-duty drug use going on in there. There's some possibly inadvisable sex. There's some possibly abusive relationships.
Possibly.
Underlying the lot, there's some, last but definitely not least, some rather serious depression issues going on as well. So why the focus on drink?
I think drink was really the founder of a lot of the problems. Now, obviously, you can never say drink is to blame completely. It's something in you. But I looked, and that title sprang out at me. And I thought I could just make this a book about drinking and what that leads to. But I thought it just wouldn't be honest for me to leave the drugs out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, illegal and all of that stuff, but I thought this would not be an honest thing, because drinking, it's one of my big sort of hobby horses, that drinking is the quickest gateway to all sorts of behaviours, fun and not so fun, mm-hmm. or inadvisable.
Well, that's the next thing I want to sort of talk about, really. But let's just sort of expand on that, because in some respects, it could sort of fudge the issue, because you could think, okay, well, the drink got you into, I don't know, heroin or something. But then once you're there, the bad things that happen, perhaps not necessarily caused by that, rather than the continuing drinking, is what I'm sort of getting at.
It could be. For me, alcohol was always at the bottom of, how can I put it? It was always the sort of the lining of the box.
Mm-hmm.
I always drank. Whenever I took drugs, I drank quite inadvisably at times, actually. Mm-hmm. But for me, that would always begin an evening and probably end an evening as well, a drink. So I looked and I thought, if I put how I gave up drinking and drugs and abusive relationships and lived, it would have been a mouthful, and then all the 3-for-2 stickers would have just obliterated the whole thing. So I knew that I would possibly lose some supporters or lose some readers,
mm-hmm.
by mentioning drugs, because some people just have a knee-jerk reaction to drugs. Oh, if you took drugs, oh, you're so silly. Oh, we can't take you seriously anymore. Well, sorry, there's a lot of it about. So that's my rationale for it.
There's something about alcohol as well that's like it's the drug that's most socially acceptable as well, isn't it? So presumably,
yeah.
That I mean that's there's certainly government health drives, and especially now, and not necessarily 20 years ago or something, especially now about the amount of alcohol consumption, in no way there's not the same influence on alcohol as there is on illegal drugs, for
because
instance,
there's
obviously.
So much more of it around,
mm-hmm.
and it's legal.
And it's taxable.
I was just about to say that. And it's taxable. I mean, when I was, 20 years ago, more than that, it was drink driving. That was the big thing. And obviously before that, maybe when I was much younger, it was wear a seatbelt.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the sort of shame thing has kicked in on those fronts. Drink driving, obviously people sadly still do it, and there's still lots of accidents. But I think it's got into people's heads because I drank and drove when I was young. I grew up in the country. You tend to, if you're fortunate enough to have a car at a fairly young age, you'd be drinking and driving. That was the deal. And I was actually very lucky I didn't have a horrible accident.
And I would say for myself, if it's not impolite to say, just a little younger than Tanya, and my friends, drinking and driving was just completely anathema. It was
right.
the propaganda
had done its
work by then,
I think
people do it again now,
but
certainly then, growing up in the 70s, it was, you were definitely hit by that sort of propaganda, and it was something
and
you just
worked.
Didn't do.
It took a generation, but it worked. Now maybe they're going to manage to do that with, for example, teen pregnancies and drinking when pregnant. That's another one. These things take time. I think this is where we get these big hiccups about all this, because governments want to sort it. They want to sort it within a term, preferably a year, but within a governmental term, it's not like that. They have to pass the baton.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously a government may stay in for 2 terms, 3 terms, whatever, but they still have to pass it on.
So, I just want to, tease out a bit more about, the whole idea. We just talked then about there being campaigns against drink driving, but not against drinking.
Mm.
It's specifically, it's about drinking's okay, it's fine, it's especially, it says, well, go out and do that. But you know, if you're going to go out and get completely off your head, let someone else drive you, you know, that's...
And then companies like, what is it called, Scooter Man came along, you know,
yes,
where someone
yes,
would drive you home and...
Well, I never saw the adverts of them. I never actually saw any the existence
someone
of
I know,
it. But...
I do remember someone using them, but unfortunately, as I remember the story being told, he'd taken so much cocaine that he started chewing the Scooter Man's ear off so much that the Scooter Man just turned around and said, shut up, just shut up. I'm going to drive you home, just shut up. So, you know, that I mean, you're going to be prepared for that if you take on a job like that.
Mm.
You know, but seriously, I think the problem we seem to be dealing with now is how much intoxication is too much.
Mm-hmm.
Because I used to love a drink and a little bit of a drink and maybe a medium-sized bit of a drink, and I miss it. But we seem to be seeing an enormous amount of horribleness. I mean, but it's not new. It's
no.
Violence, all this violence and stuff isn't new. But I don't know whether our media is more extensive or whether it has got worse. But I really don't like what we're seeing. And I don't like the way public services are being diverted to basically clear up the mess after the battle. You know, I don't think it's right. But I think, unfortunately, coming into this recession, I'm not sure how you're going to prize people away from their right to get drunk.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure... Gosh, I'm not sure if that's even a good idea, because it's often, you know, it's a reasonably cheap way to have a good time if mm-hmm. you can't afford to go on holiday and you're about to lose your home. And I can well remember, and we can link into depression with this, because they do feed off each other,
yeah.
booze and depression. One doesn't help the other. You think drinking helps your bad mood, your sadness, or whatever it is, but actually it doesn't, because you feel twice as bad the next day and then you drink again. And I think we're already seeing quite a bit of that. And I think we're probably going to see more. I just don't know. I mean, again, another of my hobby horses, I think the whole country ought to stop drinking for 3 months or even 6 months, but I think that's too much to ask. And I think that would politicize people. I think people would start to, say alcohol just vaporized due to some mm-hmm. aliens passing by or something. There was no alcohol or drugs and everyone just had to be sober. I think people would start to think about their lives a lot more and their relationships and their job, not just job security, but quality of life at work. And we might see a bit more civil protest.
Oh, I don't think people would last. There'd be mass suicides,
well,
I think,
yeah.
before the end of the 3 months.
People would be brewing potatoes.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, let's just say... I mean, that's actually a serious suggestion. There are possible ways to get people to do it. I mean, Jamie Oliver tried to get people to teach other people to cook. It was a valiant effort. I'm not necessarily mad about his presentation, all the swearing and all of that. I don't know about that. But he did at least try. And... people, just by getting trashed every night, you're kind of not helping yourself. But of course, someone who's got a really good, well-paid job can just come back at me and say, hey, I have a six-figure salary job, I do loads of coke and booze, and I'm still employed. And unfortunately, I used to know a lot of people like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I might be being a lone voice, but I hope not.
There's something we should perhaps bring into this as well, in terms of, you know, where we are now, where things have got now. And then perhaps this is... I'd have said certainly, it's quite an awkward thing to talk about, really. And I think it's more to do with the way that the media coverage focused. And this is to do with the concept of women and drinking,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, obviously you've got things like, you know, the Daily Mail or whatever, who has this, and we always laugh, so it has this ongoing project to stop anybody having any fun whatsoever
the
anywhere.
The scourge of the high street.
But it does seem that there's this... Yeah, not only do they portray the idea that there's, you know, hordes of rampaging women out there getting drunk on a Friday and Saturday night and smashing the high street.
Actually, which isn't
like,
funny.
It sort of is yeah. like that, actually.
But even though it sort of is like that.
But,
and then you see, you know, no, just bare legs, heels, bare legs, strappy dress, even at sub-zero temperatures. I mean, it's a trooper. It's troopers, I have to say.
But it's not actually, you know, the idea that this is somehow new, I think. You know, there was this whole sort of thing created about sort of, you know, girl power and
ladettes,
all this rubbish. And,
that all came in the 90s.
It's no different, is it? I don't think.
I think people have always gone out and got trashed.
Mm.
Again, I think it's chimed in with the increased hypersexualization of our culture.
Yeah, which
and
is something I would like to talk
yeah,
about.
I mean, that's
later.
Something I notice. I can't say I'm 100% comfortable with it at all, because I still feel that there's certain men who are seriously benefiting from it and women are still trotting themselves out like show ponies, even though it can be fun to trot yourself out like a show pony. This is the trouble, that the female role is so fluid, but I don't like it at all. And I think the trouble is women find it very easy to start competing with each other. I remember it well. We had fun, but there was a certain fieriness underneath the surface of, like, who's going to do the most? Who's going to mm-hmm. do that line? Who's going to have a drink? Who is up for 2 days? What, you went to bed at 4? You lightweight. On and on and on and on and on. Now, my crowd, or that particular crowd, no one was bottling each other. No one was stabbing each other. You know, it just wasn't happening.
Yeah.
I mean, there was occasional trips to casualty, I seem to remember, but again, it wasn't street
probably
violence.
Probably tripping over or something.
Yeah, falling down the stairs. But, you know, it's when people are starting to have fist fights and stabbings, and then it's when, and then when it's, as we seem to be hearing more and more, it goes beyond the fight of the moment into the fight that the revenge fight that's planned later. See what I mean? It's not just, right, we're going to have this out now. It's like, right, I'm going to go and skulk. I'm going to have a chat, and then we're all going to come back and stab the shopkeeper or whoever. That's that moodiness and anger isn't coming from a good place at all in the population. I mean, I've seen it in myself. It's just I happen to be, whether I was brought up, that's my nature, I wouldn't actually go home and get a Stanley knife. It's just not going to happen. But it worries me because I think women are under more and more pressure all the time to be everything. I mean, I know this is discussed endlessly in the media, partly because I think it's endlessly on people's minds.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you've got to have a really good salary and own a house and be this incredible sex goddess and bring up some children really well and be an amazing mother and.
But then having done all of that, you're consecutively frowned upon for doing it as well. It's like,
yes.
it's a disapproval
yeah.
of all of those things.
Particularly something that's extreme, like Rashida Dati going to back to work 5 days after a cesarean, or Shannon, I've forgotten her name, you know, the kidnapped child.
Shannon Matthews?
Yeah, Shannon, the mother.
Yes.
Yeah, was she Shannon or the child?
The Shannon was the child. How quickly we forget.
Karen Matthews. Oh, don't ask about my memory. My memory's another story. But those are all extremes, and I don't want to equate those two women, but whatever a woman has done, someone out there will say it's bad, wrong, stupid, old-fashioned, or too modern, or something. In fact, a woman really can't do anything. And I almost sometimes think women shouldn't do anything. And in fact, we should all have a sort of laze-in and just go, right, no, had enough of this career-juggling nonsense. And just say, no, I'm going to do nothing today. Maybe I'll do a bit of work, sure, but I'm going to do absolutely bog all.
Do that for 3 months. We could do that at the same time.
We could do that at the same time as sobering up. But the thing is, that leads me to say that I really can't blame any group of women, whatever age or background, for going off and getting trashed.
Yeah, I know, absolutely.
Because you need... I can remember, you know, being younger and sort of trying to get jobs and everything and really not dealing with the situations. Now, that was a lot to do with me and not just being a woman. But I remember being a young woman, you know, early 20s. Young women have to really deal with a lot of shite, I have to say. Just either being patronised or some guy trying to get into your knickers. And you'll I mean, I'm sorry. Am I wrong? I'm not wrong. And, you know, I remember juggling those two and just thinking, this is no fun at all. And I'm not surprised I ended up hitting the bottle a bit too much. I personally don't think I coped with all that very well. And it's quite clear there's women out there who cope with it brilliantly and become tabloid newspaper editors and boardroom queens and all of this. And that's fantastic for them. But I put money on that most of us aren't like that. And again, not to diss the boardroom queens author. You see, so easy to start making these kind of divisions between the sort of good women and the bad women, but it's not like that.
Well, okay, well then, I mean, I was going to sort of leave this to the end, but as, you know, it seems a perfect time to bring it up then, you know, despite all of that, as you said, ironically, you know, now, 20 years later, one of your roles has been, you know, a sex columnist or a...
Well, yes. I mean, yes, irony, there's so much more sex writing and sex presence, if you want. I mean, I think a lot of it's gone in parallel with the whole burlesque movement.
Yeah.
Burlesque is huge. Half the people I know seem to be burlesque dancers or putting on burlesque gigs. And some people are stripping, although it might be kind of arty stripping. You know, there's all these new categories have come up. Yes, the first time I wrote about sex was, I did a little column for Esquire in the 90s, ages ago, called Not Like That You Don't. And it was a little bit of advice to men. And I actually wrote a couple of things for Penthouse, although they were under a pseudonym, and I was before my time, I did try to get some sort of, how can we call it, new porn, spelled N-U, kind of more artistic stuff. I tried to find agents for it, and it wasn't happening. It was the late 90s. I wasn't pitching it right, or it was just too early, an idea ahead of its time. But gradually things changed, and then after I'd had this huge crisis and everything, which I wrote about in the book, Time Out, I approached Time Out because I heard they had a sex column going, some letters page advice column, and they said, have it. I went for them, and then they said, They said, yeah, do it. And I felt that was a platform for me. It was meant to be tongue-in-cheek, but I managed to actually shove some quite serious stuff in there and some health stuff. And so though there was a comic twist to it, I tried to keep something serious because I loathe parody problem pages. I think they're an absolute waste of time. So, you know, people would write in or I'd think of a problem that someone had mentioned to me. So I think I did great things with that column, actually. I enjoyed my time out time.
Well, what I want to sort of get to is this sort of strange tension between what you were describing before about, you know, as a young woman having to grow up and sort of cope with a society that was putting certain pressures on you, and now, you know, years later, a more open attitude towards sex and sexuality that's in society. But at the same time, it seems that, I mean, I can't imagine being, you know, in my late teens now, it seems like the pressures, even 10 years later, on people
worse.
Are terrible. And is there not, you know, how do you sort of bridge that gap? Where is the line between sort of where you can operate to sort of be in a position where you're celebrating sexuality in that way, but not putting the pressure on people?
I just don't know. It's who, very cynically, it's quite sort of Darwinian or something. It's who cracks first, who can handle being really obsessed with their body type and doing all the stuff to themselves, and yet at the same time negotiate a path through life where they're in control, having relationships that they feel comfortable in, and keeping a good job. And there is a horrible sort of natural selection going to go there, and I'm afraid that I think a lot of people are going to crack up. I don't necessarily mean crack up to the point of being incarcerated, but, you know, not live a happy life. Gallop off to therapy, wondering why all that money they spent on surgery. I mean, all these young girls going for surgery. It's I find it really repulsive. I don't think all surgery is repulsive, and I've occasionally looked in the mirror and thought, maybe one of my next decade birthday or something. But I met a couple of girls, someone's daughter and her friend. They were 15. This was a year ago or so. They looked like young women. They were all in, they had lovely silky long hair, nice clothes, jewelry, bit of makeup, slim. I mean, someone described herself as a teen as a troll in the papers the other day, which is hilarious. I wouldn't have said I was a troll. Maybe a bad clothes and bad hair. I mean, it wasn't an issue. I was growing up in Leicestershire, okay. But it was
Yeah, I can vouch for that. Yeah. I also grew up in Leicestershire.
So did you?
We'll talk about that.
Okay. So I'd love to have an answer, and I don't, because I don't want to be po-faced about some 14-year-olds mucking about and having a bit of a fun with a pole. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't be... You can't be too po-faced about this. I start to be slightly concerned when it's like my daughter thinks Jordan's a role model. Now, it's good to go, well, actually, she's held onto a business empire, having had all these sort of inflated tits, which she seems to deflate.
She's a massively successful businesswoman, which is quite admirable and interesting.
Yes, of course it is, to survive. I do wonder, but of course she had to do a certain amount of stuff to get there. You know, now not everyone could handle that, not everyone can deal with that, and it's not desirable that everyone should want to have to become some acutely self-conscious person who's thinking about the size of their tits all the time from the age of whatever. She is unusual, and I just don't. The trouble is, we live in such a visual culture now with the internet and all the telly and everything. It's so hard not to see things. It's much harder to see the achievements of a doctor, a surgeon, a pilot, you know, something like that. It's much harder to see, even if the person is all, you know, done up completely glamorously the way they never would be at work. And you say, look at this gorgeous woman. She's actually a surgeon and a brain surgeon. Guess which is the brain surgeon, you know, all that stuff. It's just easier to see the woman who's a bit drunk in a limo with a design, a really short dress, you know, pussy pelmet and all of that. It's just easier to see that and aspire to it. I can't blame any young girl for looking and say, oh, she looks like a princess. Because the thing is, lots of these women, celebrity young women, or much younger women, do look like our old idea of a princess. You know, they've got this golden hair, which is all done up, and then they've got this jewellery, and, you know, it's a glittery thing, and you want to look at it. I don't know. As long as these girls, you can have your fantasy, muck around with makeup, as long as you go off and pass the exams and get real, I think. As long as these girls are at some point going, well, that's fun, and I'm going to muck around, and I'm going to be proud of my sexuality, whatever, but actually I'm going to kind of get a job too, you know. I don't know. Maybe I'm really old-fashioned.
Well, I mean, at the minute we're talking about, you know, the pressures that are on all, you know, quite mainstream pressures on all people growing up to conform to a certain media image of what people
should be present for ever.
I mean, what I want to sort of move that onto is, you know, one of the one of the sort of aspects of Midnight Sex Talk, the programme that you did on Residence, was if I could describe the idea of a lot of sort of sexuality as you know, more esoteric stuff, like almost like, you know, a hobby, people that are fetishists and you know, these
unusual piercings
you get to a show at Olympia and stuff for rubber and leather and stuff and whatever. Now it seems that with the advent of the internet, a lot of that stuff is becoming more and more sort of in your face and more sort of
normalized,
mainstream as well, which on the one hand is great for the people that were into that sort of stuff, who were all a bit sort of like, society doesn't really accept us and our sort of, you know, and our sort of choices, but at the same time you've got this same thing where there'll be more pressure on people to sort of conform to almost more extreme.
Absolutely.
Sort of...
This whole idea of vanilla, you know, vanilla sex. Now, that used to mean everybody that wasn't into BDSM. But now it's vanilla itself is seen as a subset of sex, i.e. kind of lightweight sex.
Yeah, like boring,
boring, just boring, you know, well, missionary and da 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 da. Yes, I again think this puts pressure on people.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I've had various discussions, you know, I've got various friends who live quite extreme sex lives. And we had this discussion. I always seem to take I'm always sort of, I don't know about not the underdog. I'm trying to defend people emotionally, really, because it's easy to feel competitive, feel a bit goaded into doing something, even if no one's trying to make you do something. I mean, no responsible person should try and goad or manipulate you into being tied up or any of that stuff. But, you know, it becomes competitive. It's like checking boxes. We do live in a checkbox culture. You know, I've done that. What about that? And it's all a bit pressuring. Now, of course, I'm saying this at my age. It may be that some 18-year-olds looking at all this, their mental filters have evolved, and I'm pretty sure they have, because they've grown up with all of this flickering images, this infinite choice, you know, Facebook friends and millions of MySpace sites and all of that. I mean, obviously, I come from when none of that existed. It may be that they're filtering this stuff better. I hope they are. You know, to inform choices. It's, you know, a little bit of light bondage and all this stuff, and that's fine. But it's actually, for people who are really into it, it's a big thing. It's a big emotional thing, the whole transfer of power. And, you know, again, I don't want to be po-faced about it, but I just want people to stay safe. And that probably leads us back round to not being too intoxicated, actually, because there's some things that you really shouldn't do when too wasted. But hell, who am I to say?
Well, we're quickly running out of time, and there's a lot of things that I wanted to talk about. But one,
can we have another half hour? Who's on next?
Who's on next? Unfortunately, not. One of the things I even if we have to cram it into a couple of minutes, I really want to talk about, because we mentioned the idea of depression, which we've not covered enough.
Yeah.
But I really want to cover. You paint quite a bleak picture of how seriously depression is and alcoholism is taken by, you know, by the NHS, for instance.
Well, yeah, you get in. Obviously, individuals will take you seriously. I'm not saying everyone trivializes it, but the whole picture, trying to get help. Now, it's quite legitimate for a therapist to say, we really won't treat you while you're drinking, because you're not going to get the value from it if you're hungover, or, you know, even if you've actually been drinking. The trouble is, there's kind of a spiral. Trying to get help, trying to stop the depression or whatever, the anxiety, whatever's going on, enough to be able to stop drinking, you're going to need help. I mean, this is why organisations like AA exist, you know, and it's important to try them. They're not for everybody. As I say in the book, they weren't for me. But they do help an enormous number of people. I felt, you know, there were times like I became in a desperate state, went to casualty. You know, the nurse talked to me for 2 hours, said, well, you know, you shouldn't be doing all these drugs and drinking. You're not handling it. You know, and then he was like, we're not going to give you a bed, and go home and have a cup of tea and a hot bath. Have a sandwich on the way out if you want. You know, I went on to make 3 suicide attempts in the next 2 weeks. You know, it wasn't good enough. It just wasn't good enough. There has to be, and I'm not saying it was all this young guy's fault. You can't expect one individual to carry the can for the whole NHS. But there have to be, I'm doing a hand gesture here, there has to be a way of sort of hiving off people down certain channels who are in that state. They're maybe not raving psychotic. They're not stabbing people. They're not stabbing themselves. But they've got a problem.
But they're clearly at a point where intervention at this point could help them not get to that point,
clearly. Yeah, exactly. And it would save, I mean, look at the money it would save. If people could be treated, I mean, I think several times in my life, if someone had just said, right, you, in, and had just carted me off, I don't mean specifically to detox. I just mean take the person out of their normal life, get them some other sort of normalization that isn't that life and something else, and I know that costs money, but there has to be a way around it because we're losing millions of person hours, working hours, to all of this. It's just crazy.
That's probably a really good point to stop on, then. It's a good point to think on.
Oh, have we finished?
We could have.
Oh,
yeah,
I could have gone
carried
on for hours.
Ages, but Tanya, thanks very much for coming on the show.
Thank you.